Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Christian here with a quick note before we get on to this episode. We're trying something new out and would love your feedback on it. In addition to the long-form episodes that you've come to know and love, we're also experimenting with a shorter version that has highlights from the full episode. If you can give us some feedback on what you think about it by emailing me at christian@btbs.ca, that'd be terrific and we'd really appreciate it. Now, on to the episode. This is Christian Robillard, and you're listening to Beyond the Bake Sale, where we help you raise more time, talent, and treasure for the causes you care about. On this episode, I sat down with Bailey Greenspan, co-CEO of Girls 20, and Sarah Mariani, a participant in the Girls on Boards program. Bailey is a global advocate for young women's participation and has served in progressive leadership roles, overseeing programming and global engagement at Girls 20 since 2017. Sarah is an emerging voice on inclusive innovation and leads digital transformation projects at North America's largest urban innovation hub while supporting Young Diplomats of Canada and the Canadian Women's Foundation as a young director. In our conversation, we discuss the Girls on Boards program, increasing young women's representation and participation on boards of directors, reimagining governance models, combating microaggressions, and so much more. I hope you enjoy this episode. Bailey, Sarah, welcome to the show. It's wonderful to have the both of you.
Thanks, Christian.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
And Sarah, welcome to your first podcast episode. So far, level of intimidation or level of nerves, super high, somewhat high, neutral, where are you?
We're going at a 7 out of 10 here.
7 out of 10. Well, we'll try to bring that down to like a 3 or a 4 if we can, through a lot of bad jokes and through a lot of banter. But it's wonderful to have the both of you to talk about involving more women on boards of directors, particularly in the nonprofit charitable sector, and how that really, I think, enriches a lot of organizations. And I know, Bailey, we connected because I listened to another podcast of yours that I believe was done by the Good Partnership when you and Amal were chatting. And I was just really impressed with the work that Girls 20 is doing, and particularly the Girls on Board program that, Sarah, you're a participant in. So really excited to dive into, you know, what makes that program tick and some of the fantastic things that are coming as a result of that program. So Bailey, I'm wondering if you could speak a bit to what the application process and the vetting process and things like that looks like for the Girls on Boards program, and go into as much or as little detail on that as you might like to. And then maybe Sarah, wondering if after that you could add in any parts maybe that other people would find valuable in knowing based on you actually having gone through the application process.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for having me, Christian. So we open applications once a year. These applications are open to any young women or youth who identify as non-binary from across Canada who are between the ages of 18 and 25 years old. We are looking for young people who have leadership experience, whether it's, you know, in high school or on their campus in universities or in the community. Attending university is absolutely not a requirement of participating. We don't ask about your grades. We don't ask about your academic history. But what we are looking for is leadership experience and leadership potential. Because ultimately what we want is to provide board members who are committed to volunteering and to showing up for nonprofit organizations. We have an application round and then an interview round that is run actually by our alumni. And then it's the alumni who then make the recommendations based on the blind interviews that they've done to Girls 20 about who should be selected into the program.
I love that. Sarah, did you want to share anything about the actual application process and what it's like going through the gauntlet, if you would, of the, not that it's meant to be a blocking feature by any means, but just what the process is like from your side of things?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a written application that you need to do, and it's quite long. And then you need to do a video application. I guess if anyone is listening and is looking to go through that process, I guess what I'd recommend is thinking really hard about why do you want to be on a board? I think so often it can be seen as a status symbol. I don't think the program is necessarily designed to be like a shortcut for a future on boards. It's really thinking critically about what is the impact that you're hoping to have by being there. And for me, it was very much about being the change that I'd like to see in the sector. I'd like more young, diverse women to be on boards in the sector. And that's sort of what I led my application with. But that's different for sort of everyone who's in this current cohort. So I just recommend thinking very clearly about what it is you're hoping to achieve should you have the honor and the privilege of being selected.
I like that. But Sarah, wondering if I could bounce it off to you and kind of get into the crux of what we want to talk about today around the Girls on Boards program. And wondering if you could explain for people at home listening kind of what your experience has been like going through that program, and even more specifically, some of the different learning modules, experiences, those types of things that either you have personally taken away from it, or some of the general elements in terms of skills or aptitudes that the program tries to teach and instill as best as it can.
To, I guess, talk about the program itself. So I'm a young director for essentially 18 months. The first half of that is preparing, I would say, and you're sort of preparing for your board match. So it's a lot of the training that Girls 20 provides, along with meeting with a coach that we're assigned to, someone who has a lot of governance experience that can sort of answer your questions as they get more technical. You're sort of looking for someone to bounce ideas off of, scenario planning. Girls 20 does a fantastic job in their training weekend. I think for me, I benefited most from the very sort of technical training around financials, to be honest, particularly in a year like this where it became a pandemic sort of halfway through all of us had started the program. We obviously went into lockdown in March, and all the entire nonprofit sector is going through their own mini financial crisis. So, you know, there's a number of us who have been in a board meeting every week since March to talk about the financials, to talk about the way that the situations are changing. So for me, that training was so, so critical. I was then placed at the Canadian Women's Foundation. And I will say, like, every single board meeting, I think I've been in three, and every single one of them, I walk out just being completely floored by the dedication and the knowledge of the women around me. That board is unique in the sense that there is only women on that board, and they are acknowledging that they needed more diversity in that board. And so they're on that journey. And it's been really, really wonderful to watch these people sort of zoom in to a document and zoom out to some really, really big themes. And so my experience has been overwhelmingly positive.
And then when it comes to that coaching element, Sarah, can you talk a little bit about some of the things that I guess you are either coached on, or what that dynamic looks like in kind of everyday terms?
Sure. I would say, you know, I have a great relationship with my coach. Her name is Sandra. She actually does leadership coaching as her career. So it's fantastic to have the benefit of someone who understands how to coach young leaders. And she's brilliant. And so some of the scenarios that maybe I'll bring to her is, like, you know, very practically, what is the strategy for seconding a motion? Like, what does that mean? What does that look like? And you can laugh about it and have sort of this very trusting conversation of, like, don't worry, there isn't a strategy. It's fine, except for the fact that your name shows up in the agenda. Like, that is not something that I feel like I can ask anyone other than Sandra. And so it's been really fantastic to have that. I think as well, particularly because of her skill sets, a lot of it is around, you know, what is the best way to bring up or ask this question or bring up this issue that I'm having with something that's been written down? What is the best way to be critical? I feel really lucky being one of the oldest members, I think, of this year's cohort at 25. So I have some work experience sort of behind me. I've learned how to manage up in certain contexts, but working with a board of directors, being someone who is the youngest by 30 years, is sort of a different type of ball game. And so it's been really wonderful to have someone that I can bounce those questions off of and find the most respectful and the most constructive way to be critical, given the unique position that I have.
And I think that's a really interesting point. And I'm wondering, Sarah, if you might be able to speak to what your process is being a young person on a board of directors for bringing forward some of those more critical elements or some of those, I guess, probing questions that some people might be like, oh, well, why are you trying to dig in this particular way? Not saying that the Canada Women's Foundation is like that by any stretch of the imagination, but I guess even generally speaking, I guess, what does that critical element look like, and how, what would be your advice for others, perhaps in a similar position to yourself, for navigating that type of dynamic?
One thing that I try to, you know, check myself on is, am I speaking just to speak? And am I speaking just to be heard, as opposed to truly believing in what we're trying to accomplish And am I being critical in a way that is going to help what we are trying to accomplish? So I think that's always the lens I try to use when I think about the commentary in which I'm going to provide, you know, and also I think about impact. It's board meetings, especially over Zoom, where they would normally be a day or a half day and you're all together. You know, it's sort of condensed into these 3-hour Zoom calls. So really thinking through the impact I think my statement or I think my questions will have also helps me think very critically about where is my perspective the most beneficial and the best use of everyone's time. Not to say that anything I said would be considered negative or in any kind of negative light, but it's really about what is the outcome in which you're trying to achieve. And for me, that's looking at, okay, how do we make sure that the youth voice is here? How do you make sure that this is accessible? How do you make sure that you are looking at your donors in a diverse way? So those are the types of probing questions that I try and ask and where some of my comments come from. And as long as I'm doing that in a way that's respectful and constructive, I feel like it's always well received.
I'm hoping Bailey's grinning ear to ear as I'm so proud to hear the words, "Am I speaking just to speak?" as a genuine concern from a board member. I've definitely been part of certain tables where it seemed like people were just speaking for the sake of hearing themselves talk. So to hear you talk about how that's a genuine concern for yourself and actually wanting to fill the space with important questions and the right questions is really reassuring to hear. Bale, I'm wondering if you wanted to fill in anything that Sarah either may have missed or parts that you might want to complement to some of the things that Sarah's talking about in terms of the program. And then maybe as a second part to that question, maybe if you could fill in some of the specific components or the specific training elements that the Girls on Boards program tries to instill in the young people that it is placing on these different boards.
So I do want to sort of think about what Sarah just said. Am I speaking for the sake of speaking? I think that's really funny, but I think it really does underscore how valuable of a program Girls on Boards is. I think that all of us, when we get into a space where we don't have experience yet, don't really know how to strike that balance between I need to say something, I need to make sure that I'm defending my right to be here, I need to make sure they think I'm smart, with this exactly that, which is, am I speaking for the sake of speaking? I think it speaks to the challenge of imposter syndrome or of young people being in a space and not feeling like they deserve to be there or that they've earned the right to be there. And it's something all of us learn, whether we're in a board, you know, sometimes at a new job, I can relate to that feeling of being like, when do I speak up? When do I prove that I'm smart? And yeah, so I really love that Sarah said that because I think it underscores starting to learn how to contribute meaningfully in a decision-making space and how to make sure that what you are adding is of value. I think we've all sat through committee meetings or board meetings or whatever, where conversations go in circles and are not always necessarily productive. And so one of the things that I hope that this program achieves is exactly that, is building the knowledge in our incoming generation of board members about how to use that time productively and effectively.
I love that. And I want to put a pin in one of those pieces, specifically the piece around that whole balance between feeling like you have to almost earn your space, quote unquote, but then also wanting to make sure that you're contributing something that is meaningful and talk through some of those things. But wondering, Bailey, if you could share some of the specific components that you try to impart on the young directors, whether, as Sarah was saying, some of the financial workshops, are there other types of training elements that you try to impart on the young directors participating?
At the moment, there are 4 required pieces of the training. The first one is an introduction to governance. So learning about what is governance, why do nonprofits have governance boards, what are the roles and responsibilities of a board director, what is their duty of care, what is their fiduciary responsibility. The second, which Sarah alluded to, is financial training. So how to read financial statements, how to ask the right questions of executive directors. This is something that many board members learn after maybe 10 years of serving on a board. You know, you have this one opportunity every year when, you know, when the financial statements are up for approval, to ask important questions, to make sure that you are approving a document that is correct and captures the organization effectively. So learning how to not only read the statements, but how to ask the right questions about them. The third piece of the training is negotiations. We have a trainer from a company called Insight Partners who runs a negotiations training, and it's all about how to communicate and achieve progress in a win-win situation. So again, how to productively and effectively advance positions and arguments. And so for young women, we find this especially valuable when we talk about that conversation about speaking up and using your voice and also leveraging your experience and your lived experience and how to ensure that that is being effectively represented when you are negotiating or in discussion with other board members. And then finally, a piece that we added last year when Sarah participated in the program was around navigating microaggressions, tokenism, sexism, racism. This has been, I think, the biggest learning of running this program for the past number of years has been that young people often experience acts of small microaggressions or sometimes overt aggressions. When they are overt aggressions, we can take action, we can act on them, whether they are acts of sexism, of racism. In some cases, the young director has left the board in that situation. But there are the smaller things, the things that sometimes older board members don't even realize are acts of aggression. Sometimes they don't realize that they continue to skip over the young woman speaking up on the board and that they don't realize that that is an act of, you know, a microaggression. And so while we as an organization learn how to support young women through that, if they tell us, I want to leave the board, I'm not getting what I want out of this experience, or if they say, I want to continue to be on this board, but I need more support to navigate these experiences, we want to sort of equip them to do that. And I would say, you know, Girls 20 is not, I don't know that anyone is the expert on this right now. It's such like messy and contextualized sort of work. And it really speaks to, you know, how much the young woman herself wants to put herself in that experience or is willing to experience that. Anyway, so this is a sort of an ongoing challenge that we've experienced in supporting young directors for years. So past year, we decided to try and turn some of these learnings into a bit of a workshop. We actually partnered up with an alumni of the program, the founder of an organization called Ally Squared based in Ottawa. And she sort of developed this workshop based on her own experience and the experiences of her peers as young directors to talk about navigating microaggressions, tokenism, and what steps you want to take based on your comfort level in addressing those should you experience it on a board. She's also worked with us to put together a bit of a toolkit to do that. And this is research that we want to continue to do because we don't have the answers. I don't know that any organization has the answers around this right now, but as an organization, as Girls 20, that is committed to putting young women into decision-making spaces, I believe that we have a responsibility also to be honest about the reality of tokenism and microaggressions and sometimes racism and sexism, and to support young directors to choose their path, to decide how they want to respond.
And I think that's a really interesting almost balance that you want to strike, or maybe not a balance, but wanting to make sure that you prepare the young women participating in these programs for these types of scenarios, but also not wanting to boil it down into, oh, well, if you just do these three, you know, these three very specific points, then you're able to combat everything. Because I feel like it's such a cultural swing. And wondering, Bailey, maybe I can start with you with this question. And then Sarah, if you want to jump in with some other perspectives or experience, but not on the training side, I guess more of the Girls 20 side, but on the board side, what would you suggest for other board members who are trying to either catch themselves in perhaps some of these acts or who are trying to make their spaces actually more welcoming towards women and maybe in this case, young women in particular, to not just, you know, be welcomed to the table, but also feel like they have a place, and again, trying to catch themselves in some of those microaggressions or in some of those token gestures and things like that, that maybe they don't realize they're doing, or they're trying to catch others in the act.
The first thing I would say, whether you're participating in Girls on Boards program or you are working to diversify your board, either through gender, age, ethnicity, is to identify one person on the board to kind of be the mentor for that person, to meet with them outside of board meetings and help them navigate what's happening in the board meeting, the procedures of the board meeting, but also to be that sort of safe, friendly person for the new board member to say, you know, so-and-so talked over me twice in this board meeting. What do you think I should do about it? Or how should I approach it? Or, you know, when you said, I only have the experience of a young woman and I don't offer anything else to the board, I want to explain why that was sort of tokenizing. So having that mentor kind of person to help smooth the way onto a board, I think is vital. And I also think that we are sort of at a time when all board members should be expected to participate in some kind of anti-oppression training. So many nonprofits are in the business and in the work of fighting oppression and historical injustices, and their board members should be trained in that work as well. Going forward, Girls 20 is going to be offering this to board members. We're in fact going to be making it required of the boards that participate in our program. We feel like we can no longer continue to put young women in those spaces without at least some of the board members having an understanding of the barriers young women face and the various oppressions that can exist on a board.
Bailey, first and foremost, I'll say that that's a brilliant thing to be doing. And I'm so excited to hear that that's going to be a program element in the future. You're exactly right. I think from my perspective, one of the things to just be aware of, anti-oppression training is, of course, so critical, but also I'm not just a young woman on a board. And so intersectionality training for me is really, really important, I think, in this space, recognizing that I'm also a woman of color and interfaith. Like, those are all layers of my identity. It's a privilege to be in those types of rooms and being able to bring all of those experiences to the comments and the questions that I ask and the critique that I provide a board. I think I really try and own those aspects of my identity, but then there are a bunch that are not represented on the board. I'm able-bodied, I'm cisgendered, I have a university education. Like, those are all things that are privileges of mine and often shared with my fellow board members. If you don't do some of that intersectionality training, if you don't acknowledge some of the privileges in which you have to be there, it can be really hard to put yourself in a position that is ready to take on criticism or take on feedback from someone who doesn't look like you. So I do think that that work is so critical as well.
And I guess it's speaking to that and boards getting themselves ready. You know, Bailey, you talked about the anti-oppression training that Girls 20 is going to be offering, which I agree is brilliant and I think incredibly important. And Sarah, speaking to a bit of that, making it so that boards are ready to accept the intersectionality of different individuals and beginning that work. What does some of that work look like beyond those first two elements, which again are fairly complex in and of themselves?
I think Bailey is right in terms of how critical having a mentor or a buddy on your board is. But for me, I've had the most success in terms of introducing like structural changes that can be made. So for example, it's really hard to get a word in sometimes. And so what I did instead was use the private chat feature and tell my board director, hey, heads up, if I can't get a word in, but I need to, I'm going to use the private chat function on Zoom. I'm going to send you a note to create space for me. You need to say, Sarah Mariani has something to say. Like, that is a structural component that I've added to our board meetings to ensure that I'm not getting sort of sideswept. It's somewhat like other things, having open conversations with your colleagues about the fact that they, if you're willing to take that on, that they do interrupt you and how not to, and how to ensure that other board members don't do it too. I'm sort of navigating that both in the workplace, but then also on a board. The strategies that you use, people can sometimes, when it's new, they can really benefit from practical things they can do. Like, it's easier to say, don't interrupt me, than it is, hey, you need to then unpack all of this emotional, you know, baggage and privilege that you have that you've brought into the space. Like, that can be such an intimidating ask. So for me, I try and start with some of the structural elements that you can implement right away. People are more than willing to sort of take that advice, particularly in the nonprofit sector. As Bailey said, so many of them are in anti-oppression work. They're willing to take instruction. It's a lot harder to ask someone to unpack their baggage.
That is such a cool example, Sarah. I hope that some folks listening to this podcast will be jotting that down. That's really interesting. Christian, I'm thinking about your question. I'm thinking about the work that the Ontario Nonprofit Network is doing around reimagining governance. Mm. And I think that your question actually fits into a much bigger question around what do we want governance to look like of our nonprofit sector, of the sector that is empowered to be fighting injustice and inequality and oppression. I think that it's a question about sort of power. You know, Girls 20 is working to shift the power a little bit by putting maybe one or two young women onto a board. But I think that we all have to ask ourselves, who do we want to be in charge of the resources of the nonprofit sector? Who do we want to be making those ultimate calls? Historically, board positions have been given to, obviously, to philanthropists, to donors, to older folks who have maybe a career of experience creating, having impact, but not necessarily in that field. And it's like really been a status thing, right? Having various board positions. And so I think that we really need to unpack all of those things in your question about what does a board that is unpacking sort of any oppression that they reproduce, what should that board look like in the future? So I think it's a much bigger question. I love the work they're doing at the ONN around this. And I know there's a lot of fundraisers probably listening to this podcast. And I think then that's another question is, you know, to what extent do we continue to use boards to reward donors?
Or even just what role that we need to have our donors involved in some of our work, or what our relationship in a more formal sense looks like with them. Because I can imagine too that, you know, there's more than one way to either reward donors for their involvement or be able to involve them in some way that's beyond a board of directors. And I think that question, that broader question, Bailey, about, you know, what does a board need to look like in the future to serve the populations that it does in the best way possible, and to balance that power and that decision making in the best way that it can. I think that is a really important question. So wondering, maybe Sarah, if I wanted to start with you on that question and then bounce back to you, Bailey. You know, in your eyes and in your experience, both serving on boards and working in organizations, you know, what would be some of your ideals for what the board of the future, maybe what does that look like? And is there certain work that we can start to do to move towards that ideal future? I know that's a big question, but curious if you have any initial thoughts.
I think one of the things to acknowledge is that boards are not typically made up of the constituents in which they're trying to serve or the communities in which they're trying to serve. To me, that's a really big, obvious opportunity. How do you ensure that, and a board, you know, boards have, they're made up for a reason. There's a certain set of skills that you do need to have, but then also, are they an accurate representation of the people and the communities that you're trying to support? Often, I think they're not, and there's an opportunity there to bring them along with you in that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think that we can ask ourselves, like, what is governance of an organization beyond the board of directors? This is not a unique thought. I, again, am pulling this from Reimagining Governance, from the project of the Ontario Nonprofit Network. But this sort of seed of an idea that they planted in my head was, you know, what does governance look like beyond the board of directors? In Ontario, board of directors only legally has to have three members, the chair, the treasurer, and the secretary. What if we went back to that model and used a much broader sort of network of stakeholders to get to have influence and to feed into the organization in different ways? Could that democratize nonprofits in a new way? Could that maybe provide opportunities for nonprofits to pursue even more work in pursuit of justice so that they are less distracted by some of the admin tasks related to board management and to fundraising and have more space to pursue justice and anti-oppression, I wonder.
And I wonder too, as I listen to yourself, Sarah and Bailey, talk about whether it's all the decision-making or all of the quote-unquote power for the organization even needs to be vested strictly in a board of directors, like whether there could be multiple different committees, working groups. I mean, I feel like a lot of the fundraisers listening to this or a lot of the organizations thinking at the prospect of having to add more bodies onto their organization to make more decisions might make their eyes roll in the back of their heads. But at the same time, it makes you question too, you know, whether there are multiple bodies that you could create to divest some of that power from kind of a central decision-making body to a bunch of, whether it's smaller or more specialized, and also, you know, what roles are there for things like a board of directors, but also what roles there might be for, you know, special advisors or other types of relationships that you could have with members of a community that, again, aren't just like a tokenistic, we're having this person as an advisor to say that we have them. I'm using a lot of air quotes right now, but who we actually need to bring in to make sure that we have a consistent, you know, voice of reason and someone who will actually help us, you know, make decisions for the organization.
And I think we are seeing that shift. Like, I get excited about SILAR, for example, which is the Coalition of Innovation Leaders Against Racism. So that was launched back in June, end of June, I think, along the Black Lives Matter movement, brought together a bunch of, you know, heavy hitters in tech from really diverse backgrounds and really diverse identities. And, you know, their whole mission is to end systematic racism in the innovation economy. That's a massive mission. But one of the ways in which you can do that is to become an advisory, like to advise boards. And I know that that is one of the angles in which they're trying to do that work. So I do think people are recognizing the opportunity there is to diversify how you govern nonprofits.
Bailey, did you have anything else that you wanted to add to that before I start to wind things down a tad?
Nope.
Super. Well, Sarah, playing off of that point that you just shared around what gets you either excited or based on what you're finding exciting, and Bailey, I'll ask you the same question as well. Are there things that you're seeing, whether it's specific to the nonprofit charitable sector around governance or more broadly speaking in governance of organizations, you know, what are some of those things that are either getting you excited or energized based on the movement that you're seeing or some of the changes that you're beginning to see or even some of the progress, whether at the micro or the macro level that you're hearing about or seeing yourself in this space?
You know, I'll say when we launched the Girls on Boards program in 2017, the ask that we made to boards to bring on a young woman onto their board was like a very difficult ask to make. And it was really hard for us to recruit boards at the beginning. It was really hard to convince them to take that risk, to take on someone they didn't know who did not fit their traditional board member profile. The 3.5 years since then, we have already begun to see a huge change in the way board members are thinking about diversity on their boards. We are now in a position where boards are coming to us and asking to participate in the program. It's so different than it was 3.5 years ago. So I feel really encouraged by this sort of change in mindset that we're already experiencing.
I think from my end, you know, some of the things that get me excited is, and again, like I go back to sort of what are the structural elements that you can put into place that allow for some of this other work to be taken on, and watching boards and watching young people be critical of a board's nomination process and sort of putting in boundaries or guidelines or adjusting scoring and reviewing that scoring kind of in depth. You know, that is to me, that's an opportunity to create systematic pathways for diversity to start to win in those spaces. And I get excited about structural change. And when it's being recommended by young women, I mean, even better.
I love that. And I think we could have an entire other conversation around, you know, designing, whether it's nomination criteria or scoring systems. But I have to, again, bite my tongue because that is another rabbit hole that we unfortunately do not have the space to go down in a way that would actually do it justice. So I'll begin to wrap things up. And I guess, Bailey, if I can start with you and then afterwards with Sarah, throw it over to each of you to share what each of you have individually working on that you want to share with our audience in case they want to be involved in some way, shape, or form.
Well, Girls Tony will be opening up the next round of applications to Girls on Boards program in early 2021. we strongly encourage, if you are a young woman or identify as non-binary from any sort of walk of life, but you have a commitment to community and to governance, we really encourage you to apply. Also, you have to be between 18 and 25 years old, but anywhere in Canada, any background. We are looking for young people who are going to show up, who are going to take this opportunity and use it to build their careers and build careers that are giving back to their communities. We are also always looking for boards to participate. So whether you are a $5 million organization in downtown Toronto, whether you're a $200,000 organization in Saskatoon, we want to hear from you. We would love to work with you to find the right person to join your board.
I think I'm just going to second all of Bailey's plugs. Like Girls 20 and the Girls on Boards program is a brilliant, brilliant opportunity for both boards and for young women and for coaches and for mentors and for people who want to see change in the sector. I'm going to second all of the kudos there.
Thank you.
Wonderful. And thank you both for spending the time with me today. I've learned so much, as I always do in all of these episodes. I have like pages of notes with a bunch of things really written in bold. But I've learned so much around the importance of mentorship and coaching when it comes to actually making really anyone feel welcome on a board of directors or some type of governance body, having that that navigating of how to deal with any type of challenge or microaggressions or tokenism, and some of the things you can begin to do, whether some of the other things that I found really interesting. Again, Sarah, you talking about how to confront someone in a way that is about sharing what makes you feel uncomfortable or that doesn't seem right versus asking them to unpack all of their baggage. Bailey, pulling on a lot of that work from the Ontario Nonprofit Network around reimagining governance and what you hope to see in the future and how organizations can begin to share power amongst their various governing members and things of that nature. I'm just really grateful for the both of you for educating me so much and our audience, and I hope they take a lot from today's episode.
Thank you, Christian. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Hey, everyone. It's Christian. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Beyond the Bake Sale. But before we go, we're hoping you can help us out with something. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you could take a minute and leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to Beyond the Bake Sale. It really means the world to us and help us reach others who might enjoy or benefit from listening to our show. If you have any feedback for us or want to connect over anything, please do visit our website at www.btbs.ca. Thanks again for tuning in. Until next time.